Welcome to The Docket presented by Defense Diaries. I'm your host, Bob Mata, and this is my beautiful and brilliant co-host, Allie. What's up, girl?
Hey, babe.
So hi, welcome all. Back. We have more news. So that was quick. That was quick. In case you guys haven't heard yet, Kara called me. I'm out in Carmel, Indiana, and Kara called. She's like, have you heard from anybody yet? And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, an order came down. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah. She's like, they're back on. So, all right, let's pull up the order. Very, very quick turnaround. Obviously, going into it, they had made their decision with respect to reinstating both Brad and Andy. But let's read it real quick. Your favorite thing in the whole world to read orders. So the relator Richard Allen seeks relief from this court under the rules of procedure for original actions. Relator has requested a permanent writ of mandamus asking this court to, one, order the trial court to reinstate his former trial counsel and attorneys Andrew Baldwin and Brad Rosie as his court-appointed counsel. That means they are back on as paid public defenders, not pro bono. All right. Two, to order the trial court to commence the relator's trial within 70 days from the issuance of the writ. And three, to remove the special judge from relator's case and appoint a new special judge. Having considered the written submissions and having heard the arguments of counsel, there was a dissenter, at least. I mean, there were five. It could theoretically have been
three. I think it's the guy that was sitting in the fourth spot. I might have his name in my notes. No, the fifth spot. The fifth spot, the furthest to the right.
That would have been to my left. I thought it would have been the judge next to him.
I thought that guy seemed, I don't know, I got to look back to my notes. Sorry, keep reading.
Having considered the written submissions and having heard the argument of counsel and a majority of the court votes to grant the petition for writ as to the relator's request to reinstate attorneys Baldwin and Rosie as his court-appointed counsel. The court unanimously denies all of the relief sought. The court will promptly issue a written opinion explaining its reasons. The pendency of this matter in this court does not stay the proceedings in the trial court, meaning Gull's got to get busy. She's got, and look, just so everybody has a clear understanding of what this means. So Baldwin and Rosie are back on as appointed paid public defenders for Richard Allen. Richard Allen is not going to want to keep Scremin and Libredo. So they're not going to all four stay on, in case anybody's wondering that. Those guys will be gone.
And then we'll go to hearing to get rid of Gull.
And then there are multiple pending motions in this case. The first that, as you aptly noted, that will have to be dealt with will be, in fact, the recusal of Judge Gull. Now, where that gets interesting is typically when you've got a motion for a judge to recuse them, or to asking them to recuse themselves, they hear it themselves. But that's typically...
Wait, what?
Yeah, typically in like if you're seeking to recuse a judge, they sit up. But it's typically for a conflict. Or the judge, if they're aware of the conflict, will just say, hey, I have a conflict. Or this is a former client of mine back when I was a practicing attorney. Everybody that I spoke to today, because frankly, this was my prediction. They let him on, they kept her on, and they didn't do the speedy. Now, that does not mean that Brad and Andy don't file their speedy demand.
So they'll have 70 days from when they file it.
Correct. So, I don't even know why they were asking for that relief.
I said the same thing.
Yeah, it's kind of duplicative. So, the recusal, but this is different because it's not for a conflict. It's for bias. It's a basis of bias that she's.
Do they
biased.
Not have a motion to substitution substitution of judge for cause? Because I've never seen one of those go in front of the judge. That you're asking. It has to go in front of another judge. But if you use the word recusal, that's where you're asking the judge to recuse themselves. So I don't know, but maybe it's just a terminology thing in Indiana.
Yeah, it is. Well, I asked, I was asking Kara and Mark, I'm like, do you get like a, like in Illinois, we have like one free shot to ace any judge before they made any kind of substantive ruling in the case. And like, we get to knock them out. We knock them out right away. You know, if we know that it's a judge that is very pro-state, and we'll always tell our clients like, yeah, we got to get rid of that one. You know what I mean? So, in terms of this, it's very interesting because even if they say, all right, Gull can't sit on that, she's not going to be able to be objective. But that could be her opportunity because, look, it's been my position that with respect to the appointment of her as chief judge, what I'm saying is that I think that there could exist a world because of her appointment as the chief judge, and because of the fact that she had recent health problems, what we don't know what they were. They could be serious. It could have been COVID. Who knows? But that this could be an opportunity for her to say, you know what? I am going to recuse myself, not because of the reasons that you're asking, not because I'm biased, not because of anything else, but I am going to recuse myself because I have now extra duties as chief judge in Allen County. I'm overseeing every courtroom in that entire courthouse. I don't think that I will be able to handle that and my duties that come along with it and conduct this trial in the way that it needs to be conducted, because she's got stuff piled up to the ceiling. I mean, what we know has already been filed and which has to be heard already is we've got the motion in limine regarding the ballistics, aka the unspent shell casing. We've got the of course the memo and the Franks hearing, which, you know, by her own account, out of her own mouth, she said, I just haven't gotten through the evidence. There was some exorbitant amount of evidence that was attached to that thing, and she just hasn't been able to get through it. She's got a busy call in Allen County. Allen County and Carroll County are two very, very different counties. So, you know, I could see a world in which she took the opportunity, if that presented itself, to say, you know what, I'm good with recusing myself. Let somebody else deal with this nightmare. You know, like it's different from a judge's perspective. Like, I don't think that she's seeing it like, say, for instance, like some of the judges that you see that really soak in the notoriety when they're on a big case. You know, they do their makeup a little more, they get their hair a little tighter. You know, they wear their ties a little bit, you know, tighter with a nicer knot. And, you know, when the case is done, they're doing the circuits, which I'm not spiting them.
Well, and I don't spite them just even for making their tie look better than they would otherwise, because I know that I don't worry about what my hair looks like until I've got to get on alive.
It's true, but you always look beautiful, so it doesn't matter. Okay. All right, so exciting news. I think for everybody, whether you're pro guilt or pro innocence, or I don't know, which you should be because we haven't seen the evidence. Either way, what this means is that justice for the girls just got a hell of a lot closer.
Yeah.
That, like, they are going to file, they're going to file the speedy demand. This thing is going down like soon. So, like, I'm not exactly clear. Oh, and by the way, just so y'all know, I'm going to announce Kara Winicky is going to be with us tomorrow night. We're going live. Kara's super excited. She should be incredibly proud of herself. We'll be posting that, but she's going to be joining Allie and I. We're going live with Kara tomorrow night. That's an exclusive, yo. She actually wants to do the trial with us, like if we're going to do live coverage. So that'll be challenging because now that we know Gull is back on, unless she is either.
Wait, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I know you were just in Indiana. You're still in Indiana.
Still in Indiana.
Just talking to all these lawyers. I need to understand, are they of the opinion that if the A, did you talk about whether they have something that's called motion for substitution of judge for cause. Like, is that the same as their recusal motion?
Yeah, no, I think it is. Travis is
in Texas, but
he is Texas.
Now that you brought him up again, I know I mentioned it earlier, but I didn't mention it nearly as much as I wanted to. You know, Travis sent us a bunch of information on original actions and goals, you know, goals background and case law.
It was great, right? I told you. I'm like, you're going to love it. Travis did so much work. And hey, man, I see you in here. Thank you, brother. We appreciate it. That was a lifesaver. I was telling Allie, I'm like, dude, Travis hooked you up, and you did. So thank you, man. Yeah. We beyond appreciate you. And we need to get Travis on anyway. He's good on the YouTubes. So, like going back to the recusal motion. So that's the first question. Is it going to be Gull sitting on her own recusal? Well, that's what you say. When I said it at the table today, when we were eating lunch after the hearing, I'm like, oh, there's no way. They're like, Oh yeah. She'll be sitting.
They have
like,
to have a different motion. There must be a different motion.
Right. It's because it's bias.
Right.
How can she sit on her own? No, I'm not biased.
Right.
Okay.
I think they need to find a motion that's called something different.
I agree. You heard that they amended the charges, right? They added.
I think somebody sent it when we got back.
So, I don't even want to get to that yet, but I it's of no real effect. It doesn't change anything. They added. There were no additional facts presented by the state. The timing of it was certainly suspicious.
Yes.
You know, and it really doesn't mean anything, because even if they go to trial and they can't prove murder, intentional murder, then they still can fall back on the felony murder thing.
I honestly never understood, unless there's something different about Indiana law. They're dead. Why isn't it first degree murder? And obviously they didn't trip and fall and their blood get changed from person to person and all those horrible things happened.
Well, I think the answer is that they realized at the point that they arrested him that they did not have enough evidence at that juncture against him. They remember, and I tell everybody all the time, look, the investigation's just starting into Richard Allen when they arrest him. They were hoping that when they arrest him that they had enough for the kidnapping, and that as a result of that felony, the girls' lives were ended, right? So at that point, you know, they felt comfortable with the felony murder. They didn't feel comfortable going with straight murder because they were hoping that they were going to find all kinds of stuff on his devices, connections to the girls. Like he wooed the girls out there. Cause in order for you to believe that it was Richard Allen without it being planned by somebody, whether it be him or somebody else, you have to just think that he just went out to the bridge looking to kill people and just happened to run upon these two girls, you know? And it's like, to me, that's implausible. But like, if it wasn't set up in some way, and we know based on the memo that they found nothing on any of his electronics and he kept every phone. This guy didn't get rid of anything. The jacket that he wore, you know, none of it. He had all of it. So, and I'm happy for Brad and Andy, you know, they put in a year's worth of work and they worked their asses off, and you know, it's their case. It really is. It's like they put their heart and soul into that thing. It's a win for everybody on the defense side. It really is, starting with Rick.
Like you said, most assuredly a win for the families of the victims.
The victim. I mean, 100%.
If you didn't watch the Supreme Court hearing and you either haven't watched us before or just didn't believe us when we said 100%, if this stays like it is, 100%, it has to be done all over again.
Twice.
It would have. The trial would have had to happen twice. And that's not anything that anybody wants the victims to have to go through.
Absolutely not. I can't imagine losing a child to a crime like this. I mean, I can't, like, you can think about how horrible it is and you feel the empathy, but you can't know unless you experience something like that. And try to understand, like, going through a trial twice where you're reliving the worst day of your life. Like, it's unthinkable. I would just be like a puddle. Like, it would be a nightmare. So it's so important that they get it right on the first shot. And this, they knew it. I mean, they turned around in 4 hours. They knew they were putting them back on the whole time, you know, really. And like Mark Lehman, who argued it, I was talking to him and I'm like, look, I'm like, they didn't bring up, like, no one mentioned Gull. No, like none of the judges even brought up that issue. And it was kind of his position. He's like, look, you know, that argument goes hand in hand with Baldwin and Rosie's argument. It's the same argument, you know, meaning I didn't feel like, or they probably felt like, but now we know they never had any intention of removing her. And basically, I'm excited to see the opinion, because they're going to say, you know what? We're putting the class back together. Play nice. Be professional. Do your jobs. You know, so, I mean, we'll see what happens with Gull. I mean, like every time that emotion's going to be denied, the world's going to be on fire. All of our pro defense people are be like, Gull's the worst. She's so bad. You know, and I mean, sometimes she'll just be ruling on the law. You know, if they didn't meet their burden on a defense motion, it doesn't necessarily always have to.
You never know. I'm sorry. I was going to say, Judge Hull. I just did, literally walked in for my sentencing hearing in front of Judge Hull
I think that's an okay slip, you know?
So, but that she is going to set it for a removal hearing for them.
Yeah. I mean,
she may, I would not put that past her in a million years.
I agree.
Especially since the order's silent. And did they say that they were going to, how long they were going to take to write her? Does this set mention that? Let me.
Like, I would not be surprised either if she tries to get them, you know, removed, like that she has her DQ hearing.
First of all, I don't believe it. There is no way in Indiana that they don't have a method to remove a judge for cause, not for conflict, and because it has to go in front of another judge.
How do you prove what her subjective thoughts are, though, by her actions? I mean, like, she can't help if she felt like what they had done or didn't do in terms of not protecting the evidence in her mind, it amounted to them being shitbirds in her mind. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It obviously the rest of the world can look at it. Like, you and I as attorneys, and she never tried a case as defense lawyer. They're very different worlds. Prosecuting a case and defending a case are entirely different things. Like, they're only the same in the sense that we're lawyers. The function of both sides is completely different. Prosecutors never talk to defendants. They have no idea what goes on that side of the aisle at all. It's just like the same way that I don't know a ton about what goes on in terms of their thinking when they always are overcharging people and never giving reasonable offers. I'm like, is this from, like, I always ask them, is this coming up from up on high? Like, what, like, are you, like, you, do you have a mandate to be unreasonable? You know, is that what your mandate is? You know, and it's like, is it your mandate to never hear something that may be commonsensical, that may be able to resolve this case, and you're just so dug in? You know, it's like, I don't know, maybe they do. Like I don't know what goes on that side, but just like they have no idea what goes on. If you've never sat with a defendant, how can you know anything about it? You're just guessing, you know, and prosecutors don't sit and talk with defendants ever.
Right.
Unless they're coming in on an interrogation and getting them to sign I think it was, whose case was it? I can't remember if it was Syed. No, it was something that we were watching recently where the, what was it? We just watched it where the prosecutor came and whatever.
They come and talk to, they interact with defendants when they do things like drug court, mental health court. There's meetings, state's attorneys are involved, you know, but, and like you said, to interrogate them or, you know, things like that. But
yeah.
I, as a good example, I had a case today where a guy got put into this really great program that the sheriff was doing. And we had a new state's attorney who ran on a platform of mental health. So I had told the client, I said, you know what, let's see where she stands. She ran on a platform of mental health. Let's test those waters out. And he got put in this amazing program that he ended up getting booted out of. And that's what we had the sentencing for today. So afterwards, the judge was just beside himself as he was going through like the seven charges. Like it was the longest sentencing only without a hearing that I'd been through, just the reading of the order. So in any event, he asks us all to come back in chambers and he wants to know, how did this guy get into this program? Like what? So you saw something in him, huh? Well, I just want to let you know, sometimes you got a history like this and you've got charges like this. And then I cut the judge off and I was like, you know what? And sometimes when you've got a history like that, going back till their childhood, till now, and you've got no one who has ever stepped in to help, sometimes that's what that person needs is
mental health issues, right? Mental health issues. Well done. Well done. I mean, it's so true. It's like I was literally having this conversation. Like anytime I'm around other defense attorneys and people need to understand, Allison and I are first and foremost defense bar human beings. Like we cannot
undo our brains or hearts
from like what we are fundamentally. Like, I mean, we both knew we were going to be defense. Like I just value the citizens more than I do the government. That's just how I am. And what we do is we defend citizens and we defend the Constitution. The state represents the government. And that's cool. And we need them. There are some awful, horrific human beings on this planet that need to be put away. And like, I'm incredibly thankful for law enforcement that is out there doing the job properly and for the prosecutors that do their job properly. They are absolutely critical. We could not be a society without them. So make no bones about it. However, from our perspective, I am just it'll never be a point where we're not defense bar. So when I see something like what was going on and, you know, and when you see the defense bar rally behind, you know, what they consider to be something that was wrong. And I'm talking about Kara and Mark, you know, because they didn't get paid for this. They didn't get paid for spending their time and putting their blood, sweat, and tears into preparing these things. And Mark Lehman, who argued that thing today, man, I mean, are you kidding me? You have to imagine for all of you that watch that, imagine what that's like standing in front of five judges. And I told y'all, this is not like the judges just interrupt the lawyers. They start grilling them immediately. I think he just made it past his first sentence when they started grilling.
Have exact notes of when they
started. Yeah, I mean, it's a different experience. So you have to know going into that Mark was just out of his mind with nerves, you know, because it's somebody's life is on the line. This isn't some kind of like theoretical pontificating. With what, you know, good day, sir. No, there's a human being's life. Wait, on the what line.
What were they doing?
Oh, geez. So it was a big day. But you know, like if you're wondering, I gravitated a little bit out of my typical objectivity because I felt I just felt that I was like absolutely was a necessity for me to step up for the defense bar, because as you guys know, like I am an advocate for the defense bar. I'm trying to teach people one human being at a time that came in to knowing who Allison and I are and what Defense Diaries is, hating defense attorneys. And I've said it once and I'll say it again. I mean, the thing that brings me the most joy out of doing what we do is when I read a comment that says, man, I could not stand defense attorneys and you completely changed my mind about it. It makes me want to cry. It really does. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to put that work in. I'm trying to get people to understand what defense attorneys do and what our role really is, and how much our society is dependent on us just absolutely protecting the Constitution. Like it is our number one job always is to defend the principles of the Constitution, which goes down to like that bleeds down to your client, you know, making sure his Fourth and his Fifth and his Sixth Amendment rights were not violated in terms of the law enforcement trying to do their jobs. And most of the time they get it right. That like just that is facts. Most of the time they get it right. You know, it's not like it's some kind of inordinate amount where they're cheating and you know, just violating the law and left and right. I mean, they don't want things getting suppressed. The prosecutors are beside themselves when they're looking at something like that. They know there's going to be an issue when they get police reports. They're like, why didn't you go get a warrant? We're going to lose this evidence. Like the prosecutors know it immediately as soon as they see it. Like, and that kills their case. So they don't want it either. Like no one wants it to happen. So when we don't call them out on it, if we didn't call them out on
right, it would be just in
a free for all. I mean, my biggest frustration, and I could probably say it's yours in terms of dealing with prosecutors, is that they are driven by convictions. Like they look at it's a tally sheet. You know what I mean? Like for them. You know, that like that's what I'm saying. Like they don't deal with the human side of the criminal, like the actual administration of justice. Yes, of course they're dealing with the victims' families, which is heart-wrenching. You know, that is one of that is their motivation, to seek justice for the victims' families. But what happens is that when they focus in on an individual that law enforcement has put in front of them, to the extent that they're not going to look at anybody else and they're not going to hear, that's where my problem is. Not like, because they are serving, as I've already said, a huge function, because people that are victims of violent crimes and the families deserve justice. Like it's an imperfect system, but it's the best in the world. It is. But you know, I mean, we look from our side of it, it's gut punch after gut punch after gut punch. I mean, defense attorneys lose way more than we win. You know, they have all the power because they have entire law enforcement agencies at their disposal whenever they need them. And we don't, you know, we typically have indigent clients who can barely afford to pay, you know, $250 to get a PI out there for a couple hours. You know, it's like, it's vastly different things. And then we have to go in hat in hand, asking the judge for the county to help our client. And then taxpayers are outraged. Oh, we're paying for this scumbag. I'm like, yeah. Like we don't know he's a scumbag until he's convicted, right?
But
like
they're really paying for every scumbag anyway, because we all are.
Right.
Exactly. So right. I mean, it's really no different than that. We should ask the prosecutors tonight, but I think the way they think of it, it's sort of separated. Once it gets to them, that is the guy.
That's what I'm saying.
They literally aren't supposed to, and don't right. have the authority to reconsider whether he did it.
That's correct. Like that's what I'm always saying. It's like the difference between defense attorneys and prosecutors is that we live in the world of objectivity because we have to. We have to look at every other possibility that exists in trying to create a defense, whereas they are completely subjective. In the sense that exactly what you said exists. Like once they have that guy, they have no option other than to channel all their energy into prosecuting and convicting that one person, whether they may believe it or not. You know, I mean, you know,
Brett and Alice are active prosecutors. So they're not going to, I don't think they'll be that blunt about it, if that, you know what I mean? They're going to have to be a little bit more.
Brett really does more appellate law. But he's an active, very active appellate lawyer, but Alice is in the trenches. You know, and Brett handles the appeal side of it. But no, I mean, we always get great insight from them. You know, and we're both on opposite sides. So like, that's why I love that relationship. No matter, you know, I mean, we live in that world. You know, we live in a world of conflict in terms of we are paid to argue and we're paid to interpret things differently than the state. That's like, that's the whole point of the job. Like the interpretation of the law and the facts is going to be different. And every individual interpret, like 10 people can look at the same thing and all have different interpretations. That's why we always encourage debate, civil debate in our chats. You know, I never block anybody. All right, y'all. I love you all. Thank you. Because without y'all, join our Patreon. Come on for the prosecutors and defense lawyers. It's going to be awesome. I promise. And tomorrow, Kara Winicky, author of the petition that got Rick Allen his lawyers back. It's going to be pretty neat. She's a brilliant woman. She's funny, nice. She's all the things. So I highly recommend you join us tomorrow night. I'll let you guys know when that's going to be. I'll probably set that up as soon as I get off. Without y'all, I'd just be an old man talking about old cases. Talk to you next time.